I'm just a poor country astrophysicist. I grew up in the vast cornfields of the Midwest, and now I live in the vast cornfields of the Midwest. But when I was 16, my dad took me on a special trip. He took me to New York City, and the country bumpkin that I was, I gawked at everything. There was just so much stuff. So much stuff and people and things and noises, and you could hardly move your elbows, and there were weird smells, and there was just activity. It was like being in the middle of a beehive. It was almost overwhelming. It was just busy. That was the thing that struck me the most of my first visit to a big city like New York City. I'm pretty sure New York City qualifies as a big city. It was what struck me the most. It was just busy. And years later, I did the whole astrophysics and cosmology thing. I eventually ended up learning about galaxy clusters. Not to be confused with globular clusters or stellar clusters. Those are different episodes, so feel free to ask. I'm talking about galaxy clusters, clusters of galaxies. And when I learned about galaxy clusters, the very first thing I thought of was cities. So the last episode, or a couple episodes ago, was all about voids, which are basically the great Midwestern cornfields of the cosmos. And today, it's about galaxy clusters, the bustling cities of the universe. And like the voids episode, this will be a grab bag exploring all sorts of neat odds and ends and corners and crevices. Thanks to @DavidThePawn on Twitter, 185Transformer on YouTube, Andres C on email, Filippo S on YouTube, Grace M on email, @PeteBurkett on Twitter, Dean email, and Martin N on Facebook. Thanks to all of you. We're all going to visit the big city, and we're going to start with just the definition of a cluster, which is like how you define a city. You got to make something up to say, yes, that's a city. No, that's not a city. Yes, that one. You got to make something up. You got to make up a definition, so we're going to make up a cluster definition, a cluster of galaxies definition. Typical clusters of galaxies. Like any, say there's a range of city sizes, and clusters typically run anywhere from 8 to 80 million light years across. So just think tens of millions of light years, and you're in the ballpark of a cluster of galaxies, which is large. I mean, no one's going to shake their head at you for saying that 10 or 20 million light years is small. That is definitely a big thing. No one's going to shake their head at you for saying that 20 million light years is big. They'll agree, but it's also kind of small when compared to the whole entire universe. Just like cities, if you're in the middle of a city, it seems tremendous. But when you compare a city against, say, the continent or the Earth, they seem kind of puny. And that's the same kind of visual I want you to have in your head for galaxy clusters. If you're in the middle of a galaxy cluster, giant. I mean, this is a thing made of galaxies. It is a cluster of galaxies that's going to be kind of large. And yet compared to the universe, it's very tiny. And just like every city has a slogan, galaxy clusters have a slogan too. If you see on a billboard, galaxy cluster, the thing that will be underneath galaxy cluster will be the largest gravitationally bound structures in the universe. The largest gravitationally bound structures in the universe. Let's break that down. Structures means structure. It's a thing. Largest means largest. And then gravitationally bound, this is the key phrase here. This is the little asterisk because galaxy clusters can't claim to be the largest things in the universe. Because there are superclusters, there's the entire cosmic web, and there's definitely things smaller than a galaxy cluster. But the thing about superclusters, which are clusters of clusters, and the entire cosmic web, is that they're not gravitationally bound. They're not glued together with their own gravity. Superclusters are still in the process of forming, and in fact will never form because eventually dark energy in the expansion universe will rip them apart. And the cosmic web itself is an ephemeral thing. It hasn't been here for very long, and it won't be here for very long. We got lucky to capture it. Galaxy clusters are here to stay. They're glued together with their own gravity. The same way the solar system is glued together with its own gravity, our galaxy is glued together with its own gravity, galaxy clusters are glued together with their own gravity, and they are the largest things in the universe to do so. Now, compare their size. 10 to 80 million light years across. With the size of the universe, 90 billion light years across. And you kind of feel sad for gravity, don't you? The biggest thing that gravity could make is a tiny, tiny dot compared to the whole entire universe. But hey, let's not rag on gravity. It's got enough troubles on its own. We don't have to make fun of it. So a typical galaxy cluster, eight tens of millions of light years across, total mass of around 10 to the 14 to 10 to the 15 solar masses, which is 1 million billion times the mass of the sun. And yes, that seems a little bit excessive. Like, why are we comparing galaxy clusters to the mass of the sun of all things? Maybe we should use different numbers or a different unit system, but this is just what astronomers picked like a century ago, so we're kind of stuck with it. A typical galaxy cluster, 1 million billion times the mass of the sun. Each galaxy cluster has around 100 to 1,000 galaxies, which sounds like a lot. Well, I mean, yeah, like 1,000 galaxies is a lot of galaxies, and you add up the weight of 1,000 galaxies, you're going to get a lot of stuff, but that is less than 1% of all the stuff in a cluster. That's right, less than 1% of the mass of a cluster of galaxies is in the galaxies. Like, these things are defined as groups of galaxies, and yet the galaxies themselves are less than 1/100 of the stuff inside of them. Again, we picked the name before we figured it all out, so we're stuck. About 10% of the mass of a galaxy cluster is in a hot, thin plasma that threads between the galaxies, and I'll get to that in a little bit later. And so that leaves, less than 1%, about 10%, that leaves 90% of a galaxy cluster has to be something else, not galaxies, not gas, has to be dark matter. Galaxy clusters are really dark matter cities. Like, if you see a city from a distance, and it's night, you're going to see, what do you see? You see all the lights. You see lights in windows and office buildings. You see street lights, maybe headlights. And imagine looking at that city from a distance and just adding up all the light bulbs, the mass of the light bulbs. Like, okay, I see a bright light here. So that's going to be a certain kind of light bulb. So there's that mass. That's a headlight. I'll add the weight of the headlight. Oh, a street light. I'll add the weight of the street light. Adding up all the sources of light, it's probably going to be less than 1% of the mass of your city. Most of your city will be unlit. And that's the case with a cluster of galaxies. Most of a cluster is simply unlit. It is made of matter that does interact with light. And in fact, galaxy clusters are the places of highest concentration of dark matter in the universe. This is where dark matter has been flowing for billions of years. And then all the gas and galaxies have just been along for the ride. The galaxies themselves inside of a galaxy cluster are buzzing around like crazy, hundreds of kilometers per second, which is fast. And imagine a galaxy, an entire galaxy, you know, home to hundreds of billions of stars, moving that fast. Some of them get up to 1,000 kilometers per second. They're all buzzing around like bees in a beehive, like people in a sage, just buzz, 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 go, 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 always on the go. The gas itself, this hot, thin plasma gas, is between the galaxies. It's denser in the center, of course, and then thins out. And the dark matter is just the dark matter. It just kind of sits there. There's no well-defined edge to a galaxy cluster. It's unlike a city. Like, a city has city limits. But then, you know, people live outside those city limits, and maybe they'll have the same postal code. Maybe they go to work in the city. So galaxy clusters, we can define an edge, and yet there's still stuff outside that edge. So when I say a galaxy cluster is, you know, tens of millions of light years across, that's to where the galaxy cluster gets thin enough, the dark matter and the gas gets thin enough that you can basically kind of call it. Like, yeah, we've gone far enough outside the city. We're starting to see some cornfields here, so maybe we should put a limit here. Now, some more about this gas. 10% of the mass of a galaxy cluster is in a gas. It's called the ICM, or the intra-cluster medium. I'll break that down for you. Intra means inside, cluster means cluster, and medium means stuff. So the intracluster medium is the inside cluster stuff. What is it? It's hydrogen and helium, you know, like everything else in the universe, no surprises there. But here's the surprise. It's insanely hot. It is so hot. It is tens of millions of Kelvin. Like, that is ridiculous. I mean, it's just hot. It's just hot. That's like hotter than the surface of the sun. It's hotter than the solar corona. It's hotter than hot stars. This is an incredibly hot gas. So hot that it emits Bremsstrahlung radiation. Remember that fun word from the radiation episode that I still fail to pronounce? Thank you to all the German speakers who corrected me. And sorry your lesson didn't stick. Bremsstrahlung, I think, is the closest I'm ever going to get. Bremsstrahlung radiation is this gas is so hot and it's colliding with itself, it emits X-rays. Like, just imagine a ball of gas so hot and so energetic, just on its own, it generates X-rays. That's what we're talking about. And there's tons of it, more than tons of it. There's a lot of it, like 10 to the 14 solar masses. 100 million times the mass of the sun, spread out over tens of millions of light years. But it's not dense at all. Yes, it's hot. Yes, there's a lot of it, but that's a lot of space. And there's a phrase here we use in physics to describe density. I mean, we have density too, don't get me wrong. But there's another interesting phrase that pops up here when talking about the intracluster medium. And this phrase is called the mean free path. The mean free path. It says the average distance you go before you bump into something. So imagine if you're out in the middle of one of these Midwestern cornfields and you start walking. You're probably going to have to walk pretty far before you bump into someone. So your mean free path, the average distance you can go and still be free and not bump into anyone, is pretty big out in the Midwestern cornfields. But say the streets of Manhattan, you're probably not going to go very far, like two steps, before you bump into someone. Your mean free path is going to be much, much shorter in the streets of Manhattan than it is out in the Midwestern cornfields. So of course, physicists can't do anything without inventing a jargon word for it. So here we are, mean free path. A mean free path is important because the intracluster medium is made of stuff, and this stuff bumps into each other, emits radiation, interacts. And so the mean free path gives us a kind of sense of how the activity level inside of this intracluster medium. Get this, the mean free path of the gas inside of the intracluster medium is a light year. A light year. Imagine you're a little proton. You're a little helium nucleus. And you're just buzzing around super fast, super hot, and super lonely. You're going to travel, on average, a light year before you bump into another proton or another helium nucleus or anybody. A light year at a time between interactions. That is a thin gas. Super hot, but super thin and super lonely. Now, this gas has something strange about it that we're not exactly sure how to solve. The gas is obviously denser in the center because it has had more time to sink down. So the core of galaxy clusters has more galaxies, also has more dark matter, and has more gas. And when this gas is denser, its mean free path is shorter, so there should be a lot more interaction, so it should emit a lot of radiation. And if it emits radiation, it's releasing energy, so it should cool off. And yet, the gas in the center of galaxy clusters is actually pretty dang hot. This is something we call the cooling flow problem. The gas in the center of galaxy clusters should be nice and cold, but something's keeping it warm. We're not exactly sure what. We think it has something to do with active galactic nuclei. These are the giant black holes inside of galaxies, and when they feed, some of the gas gets pulled into the black hole while some whips around and then gets ejected out before falling in. We see these all over the place. These are the quasars, the blazars, the everybody's. Very, very energetic events. We think, maybe, that these events, these feeding events from supermassive black holes, are enough that in the center of galaxy clusters, there's going to be like a big galaxy, and the big galaxy typically has a giant black hole inside of it. And every once in a while it feeds and it ejects energy out, way out, radiation matter, the whole deal, blasting out of the host galaxy all the way out into the intracluster medium. We actually see this. We actually have literal images of this, of jets blasting out of galaxies. They inflate bubbles that are tens of thousands of light years across. The bubbles rise into the intercluster medium and eventually disperse, and it's heating it up. Now, of course, we don't have the full physical picture because it's kind of complicated. You know, giant clusters, tiny black holes, most powerful engines in the universe, et cetera, complicated physics. But we think this is the general picture that's actually fun to think about. These giant black holes sitting in the center of galaxies can heat a million solar masses worth of gas spread throughout millions of light years and keep it warm for billions of years. That is something pretty cool. Again, not fully understood. We're working on it. Please have patience. Now, the galaxy clusters themselves sit in the cosmic web because everything, all the stuff sits in the cosmic web. In the cosmic web is this filaments of galaxies and structures. It looks like a giant web, exactly as the name suggests. The galaxy clusters are at the intersections of walls and filaments. These are the high density. These are the nodes. These are the knots in the cosmic web. And so they're going to be the highest density places, the most activity places. And the filaments themselves, these long, thin ropes of galaxies, are feeding the galaxy clusters. These are like the highways leading into the major cities. The galaxies inside of a filament, inside one of these long, thin ropes, the galaxies are literally moving. They're trucking along. They're blasting in. They're falling into the galaxy clusters. Over time, the galaxy clusters are getting bigger and bigger as galaxies fall into them. Us in the Milky Way, we're on our way to the Virgo cluster. Now, we'll never reach it because accelerated expansion, dark energy, that's a different episode. But if it weren't for that, eventually we're on the road. We are on the way to feeding our nearest galaxy cluster, the Virgo cluster. And so over time, galaxy clusters grow. They accumulate gas, they accumulate dark matter, they accumulate galaxies, and they get bigger and bigger with time. Eventually, that growth will stop, and the cosmic web will dissolve, and all galaxy clusters will be ripped apart from each other, and the universe will just consist of a bunch of isolated galaxy clusters and groups, and that's it. And then these galaxy clusters will slowly or rapidly spread apart from each other. But that's way in the future. We don't got to worry about that now. There's one galaxy cluster in particular that is especially famous. It's the Coma Cluster. It's so called because it sits in the constellation Coma Berenices, which is otherwise one of the most unremarkable constellations out there, except for the fact that if you look in the direction of that constellation, you're looking at a monster of a galaxy cluster. It's 320 million light years away, has at least 1,000 galaxies. It's a big one. As clusters go, as cities go, it's a big one. And the Coma Cluster is where we got our very first hint on the existence of dark matter. And this was way back in the 1930s. There's astronomer Fritz Wicki, who is perhaps my most favorite astronomer simply because of his name and his fondness for bolo ties. He was studying the Coma Cluster. He was studying the galaxies. And back then, all we had, we didn't have X-ray astronomy. We just had galaxies. We looked in this direction and were like, man, there's a lot of galaxies associated with each other. And he was studying the motions of these galaxies. Now, obviously, you can't do this in real time because even though the galaxies are fast, it's kind of hard to pick out the motion and watch them move. But you can look at their redshift and blueshift. You can see how fast they're going, and you can get some sense of the direction of motion. And he very quickly realized that the galaxies in the Coma Cluster are moving way too fast. The galaxies in the Coma Cluster shouldn't be gravitationally bound. They should have ripped themselves apart eons ago. So this is a problem. Given the speed of these galaxies, either the Coma Cluster just happened to recently form by accident, and it's just like a random association of galaxies, and it's a very temporary thing, and we just happen to get lucky that this giant cluster right next door is a very rare thing that seems kind of weird. We don't like coincidences in astronomy. Or something else is keeping the cluster together. Something else is keeping the cluster glued together, where the galaxies can have very, very high speeds and the cluster doesn't disintegrate. It stays glued. Good old Fritz didn't really know what to make of this. He's German, so he called it Dunkelmaterie. Sorry, again, for my pronunciation. It means dark matter. He dropped the subject. He wrote the paper. He's like, I've got no clue what's going on. There must be something else up there in the Coma Cluster, but I've got other fish to fry. See you later. And no one really picked it up. I mean, over the decades, people would study other clusters, come to the exact same conclusion. So it's either every cluster in the universe is just totally lucky, and we just happen to see it in this very temporary phase, or there's something gluing the clusters together. Then in the 1970s, Vera Rubin did this whole thing on galaxy rotation curves, discovered the biggest piece of evidence for dark matter inside of galaxies, and aha, the light bulb went off. If there's dark matter in galaxies, there's probably dark matter in clusters of galaxies. I mean, that's where we first spotted it. And we just called it dark matter as a placeholder, and now it was a thing. And the same thing that was in galaxies was in clusters of galaxies. Dark matter does the work of keeping the galaxy cluster together. That is what makes it gravitationally bound. Otherwise, the galaxies are moving way too fast, and it should have just disassociated billions of years ago. Dark matter keeps clusters together, just like Patreon keeps us together. Keep contributing, and please keep going to patreon.com/PMSutter, P-M-S-U-T-T-E-R. It is your contributions that keep this show going and keep us as one big, happy, science-loving family. This isn't the only way that clusters of galaxies help us understand dark matter. Of course, there is gravitational lensing. Like, you have a lot of stuff. You have a million billion suns worth of stuff in a relatively small volume compared to the universe. And so that's going to bend a lot of light. These are going to be the biggest, strongest lenses, ways of gravitationally bending light in the universe. And we see this all the time. Just look up a picture of a galaxy cluster. You will see a bunch of galaxies, duh, but you'll also see arcs and squiggles and weird shapes and colors. What you're seeing in those arcs and squiggles and weird colors are galaxies behind the cluster whose light has been distorted as it tried to pass through the cluster. This is gravitational lensing, and clusters of galaxies are the best gravitational lenses there are. So we can use this both to understand dark matter, because the amount of dark matter in a galaxy cluster tells us, you know, it affects how much lensing there's going to be. We can also do a really cool magnification. We can use clusters of galaxies as giant magnifying lenses and see stuff behind them that would normally be too dim to see, but the light gets magnified and we can see it. It's a pretty cool trick. If you ever see a news story about like furthest galaxy ever discovered, 99 times out of 100, they use gravitational lensing from a nearby cluster in order to get that image. And there's one other way that galaxy clusters help teach us about dark matter, and that's through their collisions. That's right, galaxy clusters evolve. They don't just like slowly accumulate galaxies and gas and dark matter. Sometimes clusters crash into each other, and when they do, they're the most energetic events in the universe. If you have a million billion suns on one side and a million billion suns on another side, and they're traveling at, say, 1,000 kilometers per second, and they crash into each other, that's going to release a lot of energy. This is pretty rare. About 80% of the galaxy clusters we see are nice and round and spherical, implying that they finished forming a long time ago, anywhere from 5 to 10 billion years ago. And now they're just slowly accumulating stuff. but, you know, their violence is in their past. But about 20% of galaxy clusters are just straight up gross looking. They're all distorted and wonky and elongated and lumpy, like just gross. And this means they had a recent merger that recently another cluster slammed into them and they haven't quite sorted themselves out yet. One of the most famous examples of these collisions is something called the Bullet Cluster, where a smaller cluster plowed through a bigger cluster. This thing is about 4 billion light years away. And when you look at this with three different views, you get a very, very strange picture. If you just look at the galaxies, you know, with visible light, then you see a clump of galaxies on one side and a clump of galaxies on another, which is about what you would expect because the galaxies are so tiny compared to the whole entire cluster that they just sail on through. When you look at the gas, the X-rays, the Bremsstrahlung emitted by the gas, it's all tangled up in the center, and there's shock waves and cold fronts, all sorts of cool stuff. Whenever you have two big blobs of gas slamming into each other, there's all sorts of cool physics. And that's on display in the middle, so the gas is all tangled up, hasn't sorted itself out. And then you use gravitational lensing to look at where the mass is. Like, where is the rest of this 90% of this stuff? It's not caught up in the middle. It's out there with the galaxies. But the galaxies obviously don't have enough stuff. You just made a map of the dark matter. And the Bullet Cluster is very important for us understanding the dark matter because it gives us a clue about what the dark matter is made of, or at least how it behaves. Dark matter isn't behaving like a gas. Gas interacts with itself. You know, hydrogen interacts with hydrogen, talks to hydrogen, gets tangled up with hydrogen, and so you get all this stuff tangled up in the center. But that's not where the dark matter is. The dark matter is out floating at the edges, which means dark matter doesn't talk to dark matter. Dark matter doesn't talk to light, doesn't talk to normal matter, and it doesn't talk to itself. It passes through itself. If I have a lump of dark matter and another lump of dark matter and I slam them together, nothing happens. They just sail on through like they didn't even know they existed. And that is on display in this Bullet Cluster. This is telling us that dark matter doesn't interact with itself, or if it does so incredibly weakly. When we first made this observation of the Bullet Cluster back in 2004, this was a big piece of evidence that dark matter is some sort of exotic particle that does not interact with itself. Because all other ways of doing dark matter, of like adjusting what gravity is made of, or may have it be like black holes and other stuff we just can't see, it just doesn't work. It can't explain the Bullet Cluster like anything else can. It just can't explain the Bullet Cluster like particles that don't interact with themselves or anybody is able to explain. There's one more thing about galaxy clusters that I need to tell you about. And I need to tell you about it because it's a really, really fun phrase to say. It's the Sunyaev-Zeldovich effect. Now, this is the bomb you drop at a party. Like, if the room's quiet, conversation is lulling, no one really knows how to proceed, if you don't really know where to go from here, you just say, like, hey, folks, let me tell you about the Sunyaev-Zeldovich effect. I guarantee ears will prick up and eyes will turn towards you. I don't know what the facial expressions will be, but at least you'll have their ears and eyes with the Sunyaev-Zeldovich effect. And it has to do with the hot gas in the clusters. The cosmic microwave background, this leftover light from the very early universe, has been sailing through the universe for billions of years. It's very, very cold. This radiation is it's in the microwaves, 3 Kelvin, 3 degrees above absolute zero. It's just cold, cold, cold radiation. And it permeates the universe. It's everywhere. And sometimes this radiation passes through a galaxy cluster because, you know, it's radiation, it's soaking the universe. Some parts of the universe are inside of galaxy clusters. And it encounters this hot gas. And every once in a while, one of these super lonely but super fast protons or helium nuclei that make up the intracluster medium will slam into a cosmic microwave background photon and energize it, boost it, make it hotter. And this effect is called the Zeldovich effect, after the two Russian scientists who figured it out, Rashid Saniyev and Yakov Zeldovich, if you're curious about their first names, which you should be, because they're awesome people. We can see galaxy clusters when we make maps of the cosmic microwave background, because they show up as tiny little hotspots. Now, it's not every hotspot. It's a very, very subtle effect, a very, very tiny effect, but we're good at measuring the CMB by now, so we can do it. And we see it. We're able to map thousands of galaxy clusters that we wouldn't be able to pick out with surveys or with X-ray instruments purely through this Saniyev-Zeldovich effect. Now, of course, in astrophysics circles, everyone's super cool about it and says SZ effect. So you might want to switch to that if you're in a room full of physicists instead. But if you're not in a room full of physicists, you got to use the full phrase Saniyev-Zeldovich effect. And you can thank me for that later. Thank you so much for listening. I would like to thank, speaking of thanks, my top Patreon contributors this month: Robert R. John, Matthew K., Helga B., Justin Z., Matt W., Justin G., Kevin O., Duncan M., Corey D., Kirk B., Barbara K., Neuter, Chris C., and Eric M. It is your contributions plus everybody else's. Something like 250 people contributing to this show. I can't believe it. I'm so grateful. That's patreon.com/PMSR if you want to help keep this train rolling too. And you can also put reviews up on iTunes. That really helps. Tell a friend. Tell a friend about the show. Tell an enemy about the show. Tell somebody about the show, as long as you tell someone and mention Saniyev-Zeldovich effect. Go to askaspaceman.com for all show notes. Email me at askaspaceman@gmail.com. Use the hashtag askaspaceman. Hit me up on social media. I'm at Paul Matt Sutter. And don't forget to buy my book, Your Place in the Universe, pmsutter.com/book, if you want an autographed copy. And I will see you next time for more Complete Knowledge of Time and Space.